This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Friday, April 3rd. I'm Jeff Bossert. Coming up, we will have three separate features for you, two of them concerning yesterday's indictment against former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich and five associates. We'll also have reaction. The first of the three features, an in-depth interview that Jim Meadows did with Illinois law professor Andrew Leopold about the charges. Then we'll have reaction from lawmakers and a story from Amanda Vinicky in Springfield. Then we'll have a report on the upcoming Park District referendum in Urbana. Voters will go to the polls to vote on that issue on Tuesday. We'll also check the forecast, but first a look at today's news. Former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich is facing 16 counts for racketeering, wire fraud, extortion, and lying to federal agents. Robert Wildebor has more.
When authorities arrested Blagojevich back in December, most of the attention was focused on his recent activities, like the alleged attempt to sell Barack Obama's vacated Senate seat. But in their indictment released yesterday, prosecutors allege the corruption extended back to Blagojevich's first days as governor. He was elected in November of 2002, and prosecutors say that before the year was even out, the governor and his top aides planned to use their power to make money, which they would divvy up once he was out of office. In broad strokes, the scheme worked like this. Blagojevich would give a state contract to a business, and the business would pay a bribe to fundraiser Tony Rezko, who's now been convicted and is cooperating with the government. Rezko would keep some of the money and then funnel the rest to the governor's campaign coffers or kick it back in the form of bogus real estate fees paid to Blagojevich's wife, Patty. Patty has not been charged. Blagojevich has always maintained his innocence. I'm Robert Wildebor.
Meanwhile, Governor Pat Quinn says former Governor Blagojevich and five others indicted along with him yesterday on federal corruption charges are entitled to their day in court. At the same time, the governor says he hopes the indictment signals a move to fundamental reform in Illinois. He says the people of Illinois are entitled to honest government that works for them 24 hours a day, every day.
And I think now is that moment in history where the people of Illinois have to flex their muscles and tell all of us in government how important it is to have fundamental reform that straightens out the crooked ways.
Quinn made his remarks yesterday at a press conference at Chicago's O'Hare International Airport. Illinois Senate President John Cullerton says the indictment of Blagojevich is a sad situation for the former governor and his family. But Cullerton says he's glad Blagojevich is not governor anymore.
I can't imagine what this place would be like if he was still the governor, trying to solve the problems that we have with the incredible deficits we have. And so it's good that he's gone, and I hope he can just concentrate on his defense, and I wish him well. But in the meantime, we are left with his legacy, and we have to overcome the embarrassment that he's brought upon the state.
Republican Senator Bill Brady of Bloomington says the quicker the trial moves, the quicker the corruption can be cleaned up in Illinois. He says it's telling how busy U.S. Attorney Patrick Fitzgerald has kept investigating the state's politicians, especially in Chicago.
You know, being a federal prosecutor is a lifetime career job in the northeast corner of the state. And we need to move quickly through this. It's another black eye for Illinois. Obviously, we did the right thing by impeaching and removing the governor from office.
Meanwhile, a University of Illinois law professor says the news that former Chief of Staff John Harris is cooperating with prosecutors is a huge development in the case against Rod Blagojevich. Andrew Leopold says that since the arrest in December, Blagojevich has maintained that once he's free to tell his side of the story, the public will see that he did nothing wrong.
Presumably one of the people in the best position to know what he really did, what really went on in his office, is his former Chief of Staff. The fact that the Chief of Staff has now thrown his lot in with the government makes me think that that's a tough break for Team Blagojevich.
While Blagojevich faces 16 felony charges in the indictment, Harris faces only one of wire fraud. Leopold says he believes that's a reflection of Harris's decision to cooperate with authorities. And again, we'll have much more from Leopold in an interview segment coming up in a few minutes. Illinois lawmakers late last night gave Governor Pat Quinn a victory when they approved a small statewide construction program, rushing the bill through both chambers yesterday. Quinn had urged lawmakers to send him an infrastructure plan before they left for their Easter break. Todd Feuer has more.
The spending plan includes more than $9 billion in state and federal funds. Lawmakers say it is just a start. They want to pass a $25 billion program by May. Lawmakers never approved a construction program under former Governor Rod Blagojevich, largely because they didn't trust him to oversee the spending. Republican Senator Dale Risinger of Peoria praised his colleagues for coming together to pass this construction plan.
You know, we've discussed capital in the past, and we've always had problems with trust and language and fearing that people wouldn't follow up with what they've said.
Senate President John Cullerton says it was easy for lawmakers to agree to this program, but passing a larger construction plan by May will be harder.
This bill is easy because it doesn't have any tax increases here to pay for it. Doesn't need any, but the next one will.
Democrats have been pushing for an increase in the state's gasoline tax to fund the larger construction program, but Republicans favor an expansion of gambling in Illinois over any tax increases. I'm Todd Fuhrer.
Republican Representative Bill Black of Danville cast the only no vote on the construction program. He voted against the spending side of the program, saying it provided money for unnecessary projects such as state planes used by lawmakers. After first rejecting an increase in Illinois' cigarette tax, the Senate reversed course and approved the hike on Thursday. The first vote was 29-28, one short of the total needed to pass, but the sponsor called the measure for a second vote, and Senator Donnie Trotter switched from no to yes. The measure now goes to the House. It would increase the price of a pack of cigarettes by 50 cents a year for 2 years. The tax would have raised $1 billion for health care. For the latest newscast online, go to will.illinois.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Jeff Foster. A 75-page indictment handed down yesterday against former Governor Rod Blagojevich and five co-defendants made fascinating reading for a University of Illinois law professor. Andrew Leopold is an expert on criminal law and the federal judicial process. He told AM 580's Jim Meadows that the indictment alleges a conspiracy to defraud people and extort money, dating back to the very start of the Blagojevich administration.
The other figures who were indicted today, what can you tell me about them and what the significance of the charges against them are?
The primary significance is the fact that the prosecution sees this as not simply a corrupt governor, but sees this as a wide-ranging problem of corruption that included, according to the indictment, not only the governor, but some of his advisors, some of his political friends, and that this is not just a single guy doing a bad thing. This is a pattern. And in fact, one of the claims in the indictment is that the Blagojevich enterprise engaged in a pattern of racketeering activity under the so-called RICO statute. And so bringing all these other figures into the single indictment, which suggests that it will be tried as a single case, means that the government wants people to see this as a whole issue, a whole problem, and not just let's prosecute former Governor Blagojevich.
Are these charges different in kind or degree from the charges on which George Ryan was convicted?
The basic point is that you can't use your public office to extract private gain. And so in that respect, they're similar. Obviously, the details are different. The claims that the governor and the other five defendants, as I said, this is not just about former Governor Blagojevich, the idea that this was a widespread pattern of influencing state government, as opposed to at least some of the charges against former Governor Ryan, those are a little bit different in kind.
How are they different? Could you say some more about that?
Well, you'll recall, and I don't have the precise details of the Ryan charge in mind, but there were allegations that Governor Ryan would, I don't know, take vacations or have things done for his personal gain, and he would do things for people in return for that. That's a little bit different in degree, and I'm not minimizing the charges against Governor Ryan, but that's a little bit different than what the government has alleged in the current case, which is, according to the government, at the time he took office the first time, the governor, Governor Blagojevich, and some of the other co-defendants had a plan in mind to basically use the governor's office to defraud the people, to enrich themselves, to exercise control over the state agencies, to exercise control over the state teachers' retirement system, much, as I recall, much greater in scope than what was alleged against Governor Ryan.
What happens next in the legal process, and what sort of questions are coming to your mind as you look at, you know, what's going to be happening the next few weeks and months with this case?
The first thing that comes to mind is any time you have six defendants, one of whom has already acknowledged that he'll be cooperating with the government, the question is, will the remaining five, will they stand together and present a united front? Will they separate and point fingers at each other? Will some try to take a deal and try to point the finger that way? It's very hard to predict at this point because you have five or six, depending on if you count Mr. Harris or not, five or six defendants who, of course, have their own interest at heart. They've got to do what's best for them. What that will mean remains to be seen. It will depend on the advice of counsel. It would depend on what the facts actually are, which at least none of us know for sure at this point. And so seeing the dynamic among the defendants and how quickly they fall apart or hang together, that's one of the interesting stories to come.
U of I law professor Andrew Leopold discussing the federal indictment handed down yesterday against former Governor Rod Blagojevich and five co-defendants. Blagojevich began his political career in the Illinois House, but his relationship with the chamber soured when he became governor. Amanda Beneke spoke with some of the lawmakers who work with Blagojevich in both capacities and has this report on their reactions to his indictment.
Blagojevich's indictment was met with neither surprise nor sympathy by his former colleagues.
The question is, shall this bill pass?
They carried on debating legislation as usual when prosecutors announced the string of felony charges against him. Even Representative Jay Hoffman, a Metro East Democrat, who had possibly been Blagojevich's most loyal friend and ally in the legislature. He and Blagojevich go back 15 years to 1993, when Blagojevich first took his seat in the Illinois House. Hoffman was fairly new to the General Assembly then, too, and he says they got to be pals serving on the Judiciary Committee.
I mean, there were many of us at the time, and we were all around the same age, and we served on the same kind of committees. All of us were attorneys, so we were on the same committee. So when you spend that much time in the process together, then you naturally get to know their families and become friends.
And they stayed friends. It was Hoffman who stood up for Blagojevich last April when the governor's relationship with lawmakers had deteriorated so far that the House handily approved recall legislation. But not anymore. Hoffman says he hasn't even talked to Blagojevich since he was arrested 4 months ago.
Time has gone on, and I've said that Rod Blagojevich, as he is perceived and is acting now, is not the same person that I knew.
House Republican leader Tom Cross was also part of Blagojevich's group in the 90s. He has memories of working together on legislation, then going out to dinner after session at Saputo's, a downtown Springfield Italian restaurant that's still frequented by politicians.
It was just kind of joking around and telling stories, and, you know, guys in their, we were all probably in our early 30s, mid-30s, and just enjoying what we were doing.
Blagojevich wasn't around those dinners that long. In 1996, he was elected to Congress, where he served until he was elected governor in 2002. When asked about his thoughts on Blagojevich now, Cross says it's a mixture of disgust and disappointment.
You know, there are parts of me that are mad at him. There are parts of me that say, you know what, you blew a great opportunity. You're the governor of the state of Illinois, and you ruined it.
Monique Davis, a Chicago Democrat, was never close with Blagojevich. She'd been in the House for years when Blagojevich became a member and says she didn't think much of him as a representative. She says her only memory was fighting with him over prison sentencing. Ironically, he wanted longer, harsher sentences, and she didn't. Davis says her opinion of him later changed.
You know, when he first became governor, I have to admit that we supported him. We were very happy that he was governor. I mean, there was a rally that I attended for him, and it was just fully crowded, and everybody was just happy. And we saw a great future for Rod Blagojevich.
It wasn't too long before her opinion changed again. Soon after he became governor, she says Blagojevich turned into a dictator with no respect for the chamber in which he'd served. Blagojevich wasn't available to give his version of events, old or current. He's in Disney World on a family vacation. But through a statement, Blagojevich says he's saddened. He maintains his innocence and says he will clear his name in court. It's a legal fight that's still in the early stages for Blagojevich. As his legal troubles continue, his former colleagues are moving forward. Already, they've done something that didn't happen when Blagojevich was governor, despite his years of trying. Citing a deep distrust in Blagojevich, legislators were never able to approve a public works program. The very day Blagojevich was indicted, they passed one. I'm Amanda Vinicky.
Now moving on to an election issue. When voters rejected an Urbana Park District referendum last year, park officials wanted to build a new pool and improve maintenance and upkeep of their facilities. For the tax referendum on Tuesday's ballot, those officials are emphasizing needs rather than luxuries. Crystal Lake Pool shut down for good last summer after a consultant's report said the facility needed hundreds of thousands of dollars in drainage and electrical repairs. But one Urbana Park Board official says the problems extend beyond the pool itself.
You know, if you look at the floor, this floor is over 50 years old, and you can only clean up an old concrete floor so much.
Nancy Del Coman makes her way through the aging bathhouse.
But it's not, it doesn't look good. And, you know, when this was built, I suppose in the 50s, they put all the plumbing in the walls. So when something goes wrong, we have to take the tiles out, blocks, whatever they're called.
Del Coman, the park board's vice president, says Crystal Lake Pool has so many problems that it would be better to start from scratch and build an entirely new pool. But if voters approve Tuesday's tax question of 15 cents per $100 assessed valuation, the money won't pay for a new pool, only the planning of one. Actually, building a new pool would take a new referendum sometime in the future. One park district critic says the whole situation could have been avoided. Deb Aronson says management snubbed an advisory committee's recommendation some time ago that Crystal Lake Pool be replaced.
They have lots of reasons for why they ignored it, most of which I think is hand flapping. I think that they need to apologize to the community for poor planning and to move forward. But I don't think it has anything to do with this recent round of consultants' reports. They saw this coming 8 years ago.
Aronson says the Park District did a poor job of justifying the 25-cent tax question a year ago. But she says she'll vote for the smaller tax increase on Tuesday's ballot. If approved, it would add an additional $75 a year to the property tax bill on a $150,000 home in Urbana. Urbana Park District Board President Michael Walker is quick to admit the campaign for 2008's tax referendum might not have been specific enough, but he says this time things are different.
We're really in a financial situation where we have to cut some services if we do not get some more money, and we're trying to make that clear this time around. Exactly what's at stake.
Walker calls the 15-cent tax increase the minimum amount they need to maintain park services at the level residents expect. If the referendum passes, he says the money would allow them to make plans for a new outdoor pool, replace playground equipment, maintain annual events, and pursue matching grants and amenities like park trails. Like Deb Aronson, Joan Zagorski is also a swimmer. But at age 81, her recreation has been limited to the park district's remaining pool, the Indoor Aquatic Center. She pays a little over $400 a year in taxes and fees to use the facility. Living alone, retired, and on a fixed income, Zagorski says she can't afford to give them any more.
I guess I just feel people keep wanting, they just at you for money all the time. You know, they want more and more taxes all the time for something or other. And it just gets to be too much.
Zagorski suggests the park district look at trimming administrative salaries and invest in some simpler playground equipment. Park District Executive Director Vicki Mays describes its salaries as lean and says reducing the quality of play at parks will hurt the appeal of a neighborhood, the value of homes, and the health and well-being of residents. As an example, she points to Victory Park and the new playground that was installed there 3 years ago.
Because we built something that we knew would be special for the neighborhood and something that they would use, it made a difference between 8 people and 80 people. So that's one of, while you can do something much smaller, the question the park board and the park district have to ask is that really serving the needs of the people in that neighborhood?
If Tuesday's referendum fails, Park Board President Michael Walker says they'll be forced to cut 6 staff positions, cancel day camp programs, and annual events like the Turkey Trot and Strawberry Jam. And with less money for maintenance, some playground equipment would have to be removed instead of repaired. Walker says if the referendum fails, the cuts wouldn't happen all at once, but would be spread out over the next year to 18 months. If the referendum passes, the increase would show up in tax bills mailed in May of 2010. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News. In the forecast for the region today, mostly cloudy early, becoming partly sunny, windy, the high 55, gusty winds up to 25 miles per hour. Clearing skies tonight, the low 34, mostly sunny tomorrow, the high 62, becoming cloudy with rain arriving tomorrow night, the low 45. Cloudy Sunday with periods of rain and thunderstorms, the high 57. Cloudy turning colder Sunday night, rain turning to light snow overnight, the low 32. Mostly cloudy Monday, breezy and cold with a scattered snow showers, the high 38. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Friday, April 3rd. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, as well as other helpful information at our website, will.illinois.edu. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.